Sergeant Elizondo Zaragoza wearily circled the cabin of logs on his black horse, musket primed and ready. The place appeared deserted, falling into the ruin which nature provided for all man-made things left untended. Still, there was but one way to allay all doubt. He dismounted and handed the reins to a tense young private just sent north to the small Nacogdoches garrison from recruitment in San Antonio de Bar and not yet tested by fire. Zaragoza cradled the musket in his arms and moved cautiously toward the door, walking almost on tiptoe. He could not shake off a nagging uneasiness, for this place had been home to one Guadalupe Lucero, high on Lieutenant Armando Rodriguez's priority list for execution. Many of these rebels fought to the death rather than surrender and be stood against the wall for their disloyalty to the Spanish crown. Zaragoza glanced back with poorly concealed resentment at the officer who waited a safe 100 long paces in the rear with most of his military detail. Lieutenant Rodriguez would not weep salty tears into his wine if Zaragoza were shot in the line of duty. His pleasure in dispatching the perpetrator would outweigh any short-term inconvenience over the death of a sergeant who walked too often on the dangerous edge of insubordination.
Cabron.
Zaragoza paused at the open, sagging door of the cabin. He moved inside, the musket stock against his shoulder. He swung the muzzle in a swift half-circle, eyes searching. He relaxed then, for the wind had blown leaves and other debris through the open door to eddy into a pile against the wall. The house appeared to have known no guests for weeks, perhaps months. Its former occupants had fled eastward into Louisiana after Lieutenant Rodriguez had forced the head of the household, Felipe Lucero, to dig his own grave. Rodriguez then shot the helpless man and kicked his body into the gaping hole. It was known that the fugitive oldest son, Guadalupe, had tendered aid and comfort to the insurrectionists who had rallied after Padre Miguel Hidalgo y Costilla's cry in Dolores for Mexican revolt against the repressions of Spain. After that rebellion had been put down with fire and blood, the younger Lucero was known to have helped the dissidents and the Americano adventurers of the Gutierrez-McGee invasion. Those piratas, defeated only at a heavy cost in lives by both sides, had attempted to wrest Texas from Spanish rule and set it up as an independent land, perhaps to be annexed to the Estados Unidos. Such a scheme could not be tolerated, Rodriguez had declared. If all Mexico could not break free, certainly this far-flung province known as Texas, with its miserable little huddles of mud and stone and log villages, could not be allowed to escape the wrath of the crown and its protectors. The elder Lucero was not known to have taken part, but it was only to be expected that if his son was a rebel, the father must harbor similar tendencies. And even if he did not, his summary execution would stand as a warning to others that the punishment for dissension was swift and terrible. Sergeant Zaragoza had argued at the time that the old man should at least be taken to Nacogdoches for a trial.
We have no proof, only suspicion.
Rodriguez had stood firm for immediate reprisal. During the Inquisition, he reminded the sergeant, suspicion of heresy had been enough to satisfy God. Surely suspicion of treason should be enough for the crown. In such a time of turmoil, trials were a luxury. When no man was to be trusted, the only certainty was that the dead would never rebel again. They would rise only when called to face the final judgment and to be cast into that special eternal hell reserved for those infidels who did not believe the crown ruled Spain and all its possessions by the grace of God. Zaragoza looked up at the ceiling. The sun peeped through tiny holes and cast sparkling beams of light down through the dusty gloom to the dirt floor. Gradually, the rains and the wind would bludgeon this rude cabin back to the earth, and it would crumble into its original dust like the hope of freedom that had brought so much of northeastern Texas to abandonment and ruin.
A waste.
An unholy waste of labor and resources and dreams, and for nothing more than the vanity and power of the ruling class. For the pure-blood gachupines like that damned Rodriguez. Zaragoza jerked the musket back to his shoulder as he turned quickly on his heel. It seemed to have come from a corner, where an abandoned corn husk mattress lay brown and dirty atop a crude bed frame, axe cut from pine. Uneasily, Zaragoza bent to look under the bed. He saw frightened eyes staring up at him. They were the eyes of the old Lucero, whom Rodriguez had killed. But that could not be. Zaragoza knew instinctively that this was the Guadalupe Lucero they sought. The lieutenant would be pleased. The brown eyes continued to stare at him. Lucero was frightened, but he did not beg. He did not speak at all. Zaragoza started to call out to the recruit to notify the lieutenant, but he held back. He had no taste for this man's blood. Rodriguez would almost certainly spill it right here, or hang Lucero from a nearby tree. There would be no wait, no trial. Zaragoza brought his fingers to his lips for silence. He lowered the musket and made a silent signal for Lucero to remain where he was. He walked back out into the sunshine and jerked his head, motioning for the recruit to bring his black horse. He glanced involuntarily at the grave of the elder Lucero, dug as the final act of a hard life that had known few comforts. The place of rest was marked by a crude cross, constructed of two tree limbs bound together by rawhide. Suicide, Rodriguez had termed his death, the natural consequence of rearing a traitorous son. Sergeant Zaragoza rode back to the waiting lieutenant and studiously avoided saluting him. They had ridden together since dawn. Such a gesture seemed superfluous to Zaragoza. He knew it did not seem so to the lieutenant, who frowned over the blatant omission.
There is no one, sir.
Rodriguez had the blue eyes which marked his descent from a long line of pure Spanish forebears, careful in their marital alliances. The lieutenant half-closed those blue eyes.
You took so much time that he could have escaped the cabin and gone 2 miles before he went to the door. A stiffer backbone would do you credit, Sergeant.
Zaragoza felt heat rise into his face, but he was careful not to respond in kind. He suspected the lieutenant was trying to bait him into a moment of foolishness and provoke a pretext for punishment.
The house does not appear to have had a visitor for weeks, perhaps months, sir.
Rodriguez glared at the cabin.
He has to be somewhere. My informant said Lucero had returned to gather the cattle his family left behind in its flight and drive them back to Louisiana.
The Luceros were poor people, like most here. If they owned a dozen cattle, I would be much surprised.
What is important is that he has returned to this district. He has placed himself where I could reach him if I were not settled with mestizo incompetence and cowards, scum from the jails of Mexico.
These men have obeyed your every command, as have I.
With inefficiency and insolence. Sometimes, Sergeant, I wonder about your loyalty.
I am a soldier, sir. My service proves my loyalty.
You talk of loyalty, but sometimes I see your eyes saying something else. You should be most cautious not to arouse your superiors to doubt. We are all here to serve Mother Spain.
My only mission in life, sir.
Zaragoza had never seen Spain, nor, of course, had Rodriguez. Many generations had passed since their ancestors had sailed to the New World in flimsy galleons, and the umbilical cord had stretched thin. The dark shade of Zaragoza's skin showed that some of his ancestors had been here since antiquity. He had but the vaguest notion of what Spain must be like, and little save the language to give him any real tie to it.
If memory serves me well, the rancho of Lucero's cousin lies some distance in that direction.
Rodriguez pointed with his chin. Zaragoza nodded.
That is as I remember it, sir.
The sergeant thought the word rancho sadly overblown for the realities of this isolated and impoverished region.
You may lead the way, Sergeant.
May lead the way. Rodriguez made it sound as if it were a privilege, but the point position carried the greatest hazard. Zaragoza saluted in an exaggeration of the best military style.
Yes, sir.
Zaragoza's eyes sought the new recruit, and he jerked his head as a sign for the nervous young man to ride by his side. Zaragoza looked back once and saw Rodriguez ride up to the grave, slip his foot from the stirrup, and catch his toe beneath the horizontal bar of the wooden cross. With a jerk of his leg, Rodriguez uprooted the cross and let it fall to the ground. Zaragoza gritted his teeth and turned his face to the trail. It would be God's justice if Rodriguez should be struck down somewhere and had neither grave nor marker, but fed the wolves and the buzzards and the ants. The young recruit looked worried.
If we find this Lucero, I suppose the lieutenant will hang him?
Or shoot him, whatever comes into his mind.
The young man's eyes had a haunted look.
They have shot or hanged many a bar because of the rebellion. No one is above suspicion, not even the priests.
Zaragoza clenched a fist. How many more must die before this insanity ran its course? Zaragoza heard the bawling of cattle before he broke out of a heavy wood and saw a small farm in a clearing just above a narrow creek. In a nearby field, newly risen corn stood green, waving in the soft southern wind. A woman and several children labored in a modest garden. A man and two large boys had a dozen or so cattle caught up in a pen. By the look of it, they were branding several new spring calves. Light gray smoke rose from a small fire beside the log corral. He remembered the place, for he had ridden by more than once during their first search for Guadalupe Lucero. The farmer here had stoutly proclaimed his loyalty and denounced all traitors with a fervor that should have pleased even Rodriguez. Zaragoza rode a few paces into the open, then waited for the rest of the patrol to come up. He saw no threat from either house or corral, but he suspected Rodriguez would send him ahead as a target to test the danger. He waited only for confirmation of his expectation, and it was not long in coming.
Why do you wait, Sergeant? Proceed and determine the intentions of those people.
This time the sergeant saluted with purpose. On the slender chance that someone might be waiting in ambush, he saw no reason not to make it clear who was in authority and therefore most suitable for assassination. The man in the branding pen halted the work and climbed over the fence. Fear was etched in his brown face as his gaze went beyond the sergeant and the young recruit to the horsemen waiting behind them. The coming of the military in these mean times was always reason for fear, even among those who had remained faithful through the troubles. Zaragoza gave the corral a quick scrutiny and saw no weapons more fierce than an intricately designed branding iron which glowed red in the small fire. He turned in the saddle and gave the lieutenant a signal to come ahead. The two boys, one 10 or 12, the other some years older, remained inside the corral with the cattle. Their attention was riveted to the horsemen who rode in behind the sergeant. Zaragoza saw the same fear in their eyes as in their father's. The man removed his hat.
In what way may I serve you?
Your name is Lucero?
No. My name is Moreno.
But you are related to the family named Lucero.
I once had a cousin by that name. He's dead.
He was a traitor, and I killed him. He had a son named Guadalupe Lucero. We are informed that he has been seen.
Sweat broke across Moreno's forehead and ran down his face.
He is not here.
But has he been here? And where is he now?
I have no knowledge of him.
Rodriguez tried staring him down, then looked to the boys.
You two, come out here.
They are but boys. They know nothing.
Rodriguez directed a menacing gaze at first one, then the other.
To lie to me is treason. Do you know the whereabouts of Guadalupe Lucero?
The youngsters stood mute, trembling with fear.
Please, they are just boys. They know nothing of politics or treason, and they do not know Guadalupe Lucero.
Rodriguez signaled the patrol to dismount. He looked at two of his largest men.
Throw this man to the ground.
No, please! I am a patriot! Please! No, I love Mother Spain!
Pull off his boots and sit on his legs.
Rodriguez walked to the fire, gingerly lifted the branding iron from among the red coals. The stamp end of it shimmered with a blistering heat.
The Inquisition taught us that there is nothing like fire to give faith and loyalty their severest test.
Rodriguez lowered the heated end of the iron.
Tell me about Lucero.
I know nothing of him!
Rodriguez walked past the two men who held Moreno tightly to the ground. He jammed the blazing iron against a bare foot.
How is your memory now?
Sergeant Zaragoza looked away, but he could not escape the nauseating stench of burned flesh. He saw shock and anger in the faces of the other soldiers. If the fugitive Lucero were to appear now and attempt to murder the lieutenant, Zaragoza thought he would face little resistance from the soldiers. Rodriguez applied the iron to the other foot. The older of the two boys rushed forward.
Stop! Stop! I will tell you!
Rodriguez stepped back, holding the iron like a weapon.
Be quick, then.
He came looking for his cattle, but could not find any. We do not know where he is now.
Rodriguez turned his hard stare to the younger boy.
Is this true?
The boy's fear would not let him bring out words, but he nodded quickly. Rodriguez turned back to Moreno.
Men, turn him loose. So, you lied to us.
Moreno brought his legs up and gripped one foot in agony. Rodriguez drew his sword from its sheath.
This man is known as a patriot, sir. He was only being loyal to those of his blood.
In these times, a man can have but one loyalty.
The younger boy dropped to his knees beside his dying father, unmindful of the blood. The older one stood silent, more than a little frightened. But mixed with the fear in his eyes was a defiance and a hatred that once kindled would be there for life. Zaragoza knew the same hatred must be evident in his own eyes, but at this moment he didn't care.
The man was a patriot.
Rodriguez gave him a look that invited him to insubordination. Zaragoza recognized the trap and drew back from it. Rodriguez knelt and wiped the blood from his sword onto the dying man's pants leg.
The next time I ask one of these mestizo peasants a question, he will be eager to answer, and with the truth.
The day will come when they will answer you with a sword.
Rodriguez mounted his horse and turned back to the two boys.
Spread the word. This is what awaits any traitor and any invader who sets foot in my district. Death! Swift and certain!
Rodriguez's eyes were like blue fire as he swung his gaze to Zaragoza.
Now, let us go and find Lucero.
The sergeant touched spurs to his horse and set him into a trot, eager to leave this place. He gave the officer a glance that carried black anger.
Someday, Rodriguez. Someday.
Michael Lewis was hesitant about riding to Uncle Benjamin's farm with Papa because of the worrisome secret he possessed about his mother and his uncle. He feared that through a look or a word let slip, he might betray his uneasiness to Mordecai and be hard put to explain. He loved his father too much to lie to him, though on occasion, when silence seemed appropriate, Michael had neglected to tell everything he knew. Silence seemed highly appropriate in this case. But he saddled old Blaze and went, for it was not often he was granted an opportunity to ride in the splendid shadow of his father. Besides, he had always enjoyed his uncle's place. Its fields were larger because Benjamin Lewis stayed home and tended to them, breaking out new ground as time allowed, whereas Mordecai seemed always to have interests elsewhere and left the day-to-day responsibilities to his sons. Uncle Benjamin had even built two cabins, a small one a few paces away from the larger, so his growing sons would have a sleeping place apart from their elders, as well as from their sisters. Benjamin had strong notions about the right of things, certainly where his children were concerned. Papa, by contrast, never seemed to bother himself with such details. His mind was on the hills and the forests. Bringing the children up proper was a mother's place. Going to Uncle Benjamin's usually provided Michael a welcome visit with Cousin Frank, who always knew a good story to tell or had something new worth showing off. Today he was bubbling about a colt, but Michael could spare no time for such diversions. Papa had come to see Uncle Benjamin on a matter of urgency. Michael wanted to hear him tell again about Texas, for the name had begun to arouse a thrill, an image of a golden land, huge and open. The Tennessee that Michael knew was steep hills and narrow valleys, noisy settlements and deep forests in which the sun didn't shine. If the moment came when the climate seemed right, Michael intended to put in a few words of his own. Uncle Benjamin looked much like Mordecai, except more solidly built, with several more pounds on his tall, sturdy frame. Papa was on the thin side. He seemed always to be on the move, took his victuals when Providence smiled upon him. For days at a time, she turned her face away. Mordecai and Uncle Benjamin hunched on rough benches beneath the great umbrella of an oak tree, while Michael and Frank sat cross-legged on the ground, near enough to hear the conversation, but not close enough that they were likely to be sent away on some fool's errand to get them out from underfoot. Uncle Benjamin was mending a broken piece of harness leather. Even when he rested, he liked to busy his hands with useful endeavor.
Sure, it's a gamble, Ben. Everything we ever done was a gamble. Coming out here into western Tennessee weren't no certain thing. But we done it because we thought we'd better ourselves. And we have, ain't we? Look here at this place of yours.
Benjamin Lewis had the stressed expression of a man who had caught one foot in a bear trap and the other in a bear's mouth. Clearly, he was reluctant and looking for a way out.
Texas is to the edge of the whole earth, almost.
But I already been there. I tell you, except for the distance, there ain't no more risk in Texas than right where we're at, hardly. Well, I never heard one word about bad engines. They ain't got none where me and Eli was at. Them that's there, they're friendly.
But it ain't even the United States.
It ain't nothing to speak of. Spain claims some kind of hold on it, but it's so far from the rest of their country that they don't do much. There's a handful of soldiers and a little old court there in Nacogdoches. Is all I heard tell of. If a man will take roundings on Nacogdoches, just pass her by, he can go anywhere he's a mind to, pretty near.
Benjamin vigorously shook his head.
That sounds too easy to me. I never found nothing easy that was worthwhile.
There's a fortune, Ben, waiting there for the reaching and taking. You know what horses will fetch in this country. There's horses out yonder free for the catching, enough to plow out every canebrake from here to the tidewater. We just gotta go catch them and fetch them back.
A dark frown cut Benjamin's face.
Hey, you've got a fortune here, Mordecai, if you just stop looking off into the distance all the time and see what's right under your feet. Other men would kill for what you already have. You've got a good place if you'd stay home and tend it. You got a bunch of good young'uns and the finest wife.
Pain came into Benjamin's eyes. Aunt Nancy had lain since last winter beneath a roughly chiseled stone marker beneath a small rail fence at the edge of the woods. Watching his uncle now, Michael just about convinced himself that all he had seen was his mother comforting Uncle Benjamin in his loneliness.
But I got a chance to make it better.
It seems to me like you're always looking for a big chance, and it's always somewheres else. The biggest chance you'll ever have is right here where you're at.
Benjamin's gaze shifted to Michael for a moment.
If it was your boy Michael aching to find new country, I'd understand. We did when we were as young as him. But there's gray in your hair now. It's time you stayed home with patience and thank the Lord for the blessings you've already got.
As soon as I get done with this last trip, this is the one I've been looking for all my life. It's my chance to pay off debts instead of making them bigger. It's my chance to be somebody of my own, and not just the younger brother of Benjamin Lewis.
Benjamin gave him a long and critical study.
Oh, I didn't know you felt like that about it.
Ain't your fault, Ben. But from the time we was little, I always stood in your shadow, seemed like. Whatever we done that was good, Pap gave you the credit for it. Whatever we done wrong was always me. It wasn't nothing for me but to run off to the woods, and I'd done it time after time. I spent my whole life trying to catch up to you. And I ain't been able. But you just wait till I bring back a big bunch of fine horses to sell. It'll be different then.
It won't be different. First thing you know, you'll be wanting to drag your whole family off to Texas.
Mordecai looked quickly away. Michael knew that thought had been in his father's mind. Uncle Benjamin had read him like Cousin Frank would read a book.
It'll be just like when we came here. This was the place you'd been looking for all your life. You said you could stay here forever.
But it changed, don't you see? That's always been the trouble. Everywhere I went, people followed after like I'd blaze a trail just for them. And people always spoiled it for me. I want to find a place that'll stay the way it is when I first lay eyes on it. No change. No people. Just me and mine.
It's a dream, Mordecai. A hopeless dream. There's no such place. Not this side of the moon.
There's got to be one, and I'll find it. This time I'll find it.
Michael could see his uncle giving in. He'd never been able to keep saying no to Papa.
Well, just what is it you want me to do?
It'll take good horses to catch good horses. You know I ain't got nothing fit for the job.
I've got old Blaze.
His father acknowledged the interruption with a sharp look. Michael had interrupted the flow of his well-calculated argument.
You've got some good horses, Ben. You lend me and Eli one apiece, and maybe throw in an extra to take along just in case. I promise you'll get them back and have your pick of the catch to boot.
Benjamin flinched and cut a piece of leather completely in two.
Ow.
He stared at it in dismay.
You was riding a good horse the last time you left here. You came home afoot.
Benjamin dropped the harness to the ground in resignation.
Gosh. I couldn't mount a whole expedition. What about the other men you're figuring to take with you?
They'll furnish their own. That's part of the agreement.
Except you and Eli Pleasant. I'm furnishing for you all.
Alone, Ben. That's all it is. You'll be repaid with interest.
Benjamin finally shrugged, as Michael had known all along he would.
All right, Mordecai. You can take that sorrel of mine, Big Red. He's the fastest thing I ever rode. He ought to catch up to your wild horses. Red's got a running mate that he always stays with. Old Jug. Pleasant can have him. Jug ain't as fast, but he's hog stout. He can hold anything you and Red can catch.
Mordecai's gratitude was genuine. It always was, every time Ben gave him something.
I'm much obliged. And you won't be sorry, not for a minute. You just wait and see what we come back with.
Mordecai glanced at Michael.
Grieves me, of course, to go off and leave the youngins in patience again. You look in on them now and again, won't you? Kind of watch out for him?
Benjamin nodded, as he always did when this question came up.
Sure I will.
Michael knew it was time to speak if he was ever going to.
I don't know if old Blaze is fast enough to catch wild horses.
Mordecai laid his heavy hand on Michael's shoulder.
Yeah, it don't matter. He ain't going, and neither are you.
Papa, when you left in the spring, you said you'd take me with you next time.
I didn't mean to Texas.
But I could help. I'm a good shot. You always said so yourself. I can keep the camp in meat, so you and the others won't have to be fretting with it.
I know you're good with a rifle. That's all the more reason your mama needs you here to keep the house supplied.
Michael reverted to an old argument that had done him no good the last time.
Andrew's pretty near as good a shot as I am, and better at following tracks. And Joseph takes good care of the field work.
His father resolutely shook his head, his blue eyes firmly declaring the subject closed. Michael's throat went tight in disappointment. Cousin Frank Lewis punched Michael in the ribs.
Why don't you come out with me and look at my new colt? Time he's full grown, me and you go to Texas ourselves.
Mordecai and Uncle Benjamin had turned away and were walking toward the house. Michael felt shut out.
Sure, Frank. Let's go see him.
All the way home with Papa and the three borrowed horses, Michael kept thinking of a more effective way he could have broached the subject. He wished Papa were as easy to talk into things as Uncle Benjamin was. But at least Michael was riding beside Papa now. That was consolation of a sort. Astride the big, handsome sorrel, Papa fulfilled every image Michael had built in his mind. Michael kept looking at his own shadow on the ground, measuring it against Papa's, and wondering how much longer it would be before he was as tall. One thing about Papa, folks might say he had a rover's restless foot and all that, but they had to look up to him just the same. Papa seemed to have a way of sensing things.
You'll be grown before you know it, son.
I wish I already was so I could go to Texas, too.
Yeah, you'll go to Texas. Probably sooner than you think. I have a notion we'll all go together once I get home from this trip.
Is it really as fine a place as Eli says?
Old Eli ain't got the words to tell it. These little old cramped up hills and woods of Tennessee, they ain't nothing to what's out yonder. You ride over a hill and you can see into the middle of next week. You ride over the next one, and it's more of the same. Ain't nothing I ever seen that's a particle as big. And rich soil? Woo! They say if you drop a seed on the ground, you better step back quick to keep from being hit in the face by the plant coming up.
Michael thought Papa might be exaggerating just a little bit, but all the same, it sounded like a place he had to see. They rode by the field and saw Eli Pleasant out in the middle of the standing corn with Joseph and Andrew. He was making broad gestures, probably relating some of his adventures. He had a whole bag of them. Andrew would be listening, holding his breath, but Joseph would have his mind on some way to make the corn grow bigger ears. He was turned more like Uncle Benjamin than like Papa. Business came before pleasure. In fact, business was his pleasure. Riding up to the cabin with his father, Michael saw a mule tied to a post. Mordecai asked with his eyes,
"That's old man Blackwood's mule. He's probably come to beg something off us again."
"Now, son, it ain't meant for us to speak ill of our fellow man."
Mordecai was still feeling good about getting the horses from Uncle Benjamin.
"Surely old Cyrus must have some good points."
"Only good ones I know is that it don't come around very often.
Papa ought to be able to read character for himself, especially when it was as plain as yesterday's tobacco juice and Cyrus Blackwood's beard. Blackwood was lying on the ground in the shade of a tree while his mule stood hitched in the sun. After getting up and stretching himself, the man slowly followed Mordecai and Michael and the horses down to the pole pens.
Howdy, Mordecai. I see you got home.
That was about as intelligent as the conversation was likely to get.
Yeah, I'm here, Cyrus. What can I do for you?
I hear you're fixing to go out west and catch you some horses.
I've been talking to some folks about it.
I was hoping you'd see fit to let me ride along with you.
You, Cyrus? Why on earth would you be one to make a trip such as that?
Same reason as you, I reckon. My family could sure use some money. Yeah, I guess that bunch of horses would fetch a right smart price.
Michael could see his father begin casting about for a way to get out of this.
Well, I ain't taking nobody but single men and one widower that ain't got nobody. Well, you got family needing you.
Michael thought the argument was beginning to sound much like Uncle Benjamin's. And it was having about as much effect.
I got boys big enough to see after things here. The boys are better at farming than I ever was. Well, Isaac, anyhow. Mrs., she acts like she's happier when I ain't around too much. Name's Charity, you know. I ain't got much charity about her when it comes to me.
Mordecai began to tell things he'd not mentioned to Uncle Benjamin.
Well, it's a long ways, and there ain't no telling what all could happen. We got Injun country to go through, and when we get to Texas, we won't be protected by no American laws. Them Spanish, they could do just about anything they was of a mind to with us, and there wouldn't be nobody we could look to for help.
Nothing swayed Cyrus Blackwood. He kept arguing need until Mordecai ran out of counter-arguments. Finally, Mordecai was down to one last reservation.
All I see is that mule, Cyrus. He won't be no good to you and the job we got cut out for us.
Now, don't you fret none about that. I know where I can lay my hands on a real good horse. The match of anything you just brought in. When did you say we was leaving?
Day after tomorrow morning, first light. Boys will be gathering here tomorrow so we can make an early start.
I'll be here.
Cyrus grabbed Mordecai's hand and shook it.
I'm much obliged to you, Mordecai. You don't know what this will mean to my family.
Mordecai stared helplessly after him as Cyrus untied the mule, wriggled up bareback, and rode the animal away in a long, splay-footed trot.
I never did tell him he could go.
He'll probably get tired after a day or two and turn back, especially if he's got to do any work.
Ah, well. One more pair of hands might make a difference somewhere down the line.
Michael knew Cyrus better than Mordecai did. He knew the whole family.
You'll have to be watching him all the time. When he does turn back, he'll steal whatever he can get his hands on.
I don't know where you get your dark ways of looking on people. Don't come for me.
After supper, Mordecai and Eli Pleasant huddled together in the kitchen, talking plans. Papa was going to ride to the settlement the next day and sell pelts that Michael and Andrew had put together after Mordecai had left last time and before warm weather spoiled the trapping. That money would go for supplies. Mordecai always traveled light, relying upon his ability to live mostly off the land, and Michael supposed, from the gaunt look of him, that Eli was used to doing the same. But powder and lead and coffee and flour were things they couldn't find in the woods. Listening to their talk, Michael felt a tingling sensation from his rump halfway up his back. The longer he considered, the more the thought of staying behind made his stomach feel sour. An idea had come to him during the night after Papa had first mentioned his plan. It had been just a wild notion in the beginning, but he had kept sifting through it for whatever parts of it might serve reality. Papa was in for a surprise. The men began to gather as the next day wore on. With each new addition, the air became more electric, like before a spring thunderstorm. There was old man Wilson from down on Buck Holler, who had gone with Papa and Uncle Benjamin the time they followed Andrew Jackson off to fight the British. They were the two Macklin brothers from over on Money Branch. The sheriff would be tickled to see them leave the country for a while. They were always starting a scrap down at the settlement, fighting each other if they couldn't get somebody else to mix into it. There was a book-learned man named Judkins, some said had come from a wealthy planter family over in Virginia, but had been turned out on his own because he couldn't leave the whiskey alone. Michael figured he'd get precious little of it on this trip. Papa liked the jug as well as anybody when he was home, but he didn't hold with it on the trail. It put a man at too much disadvantage, he always said, like wearing his left boot on his right foot. Nature provided enough to confound a man without him making it worse on his own account. Other men were strangers to Michael, but Papa seemed to know them well enough. They were his kindred spirits, men of the cane. By supper time, there were nine, not counting Papa and Eli Pleasant. They were buckskin men, for the most part, carrying long rifles, long knives. A couple wore pistols and leather holsters. They were a rough-looking bunch all in all, Michael thought, capable of riding into the biggest hostile Shawnee camp that ever was and making a smoking ruin of it. That was the kind of men Mordecai had always seemed to gather around him, men who took more glory in the challenge than in the accomplishment. And their horses. Rarely had Michael seen so many likely animals in one place, though he thought none were as good as the sorrel Uncle Benjamin had loaned Papa. There was a lot of laughing and joking and loud talking around the cabin that afternoon and evening, but none of it came from Mama. Michael had not heard her say 10 words all day except whatever was necessary to get the work done and the family and the newcomers fed. She kept looking at Papa with eyes that were sometimes sad and sometimes angry. Little Annie clung to her father's neck as much as he would tolerate when he was sitting, or to his leg when he was standing. Heather, because she was 11 and nearly grown, was more reserved and held her distance, but her blue eyes were as sad as Mama's. Darkness came, but Cyrus Blackwood did not. Michael was afraid to mention his name for fear that the old reprobate would appear. Speak of the devil. He saw Papa look hopefully in the direction of the Blackwood place a couple of times. He couldn't tell whether Papa wanted Cyrus to show up or wished he wouldn't. The men rolled out their blankets and slept on the ground, all except Mordecai, who spent his last night at home where a married man should, in bed with his wife. Instead of sleeping with the boys up in the loft, as he had done these past several nights, Eli Pleasant carried out his one blanket and joined the rest of the men. But not before he took Michael aside for a little quiet counsel.
Now, young feller, I know you're disappointed. But as long as you live under your papa's roof, you got to stand by him and do as he says.
When Papa was 16, he was traveling with a bunch, making trail all over the mountains.
You're old enough, I don't question that. But your daddy ain't told it all. There's more risk than he's let on to your mama, about a heap sight more. Now, man don't win high stakes without he bets high stakes, and Mordecai's betting his life, but he ain't betting yours.
Pleasant laid both hands heavily on Michael's shoulders.
You got a lot of your papa in you. I seen that right off. You'll pretty soon be off chasing the wild geese like me and your papa, and more than likely leaving some good woman behind to cry just like your mama.
You think Papa will ever catch them wild geese?
Nah, it's the chasing he lives for, not the catching. He sows, but other men reap. I'm afraid you've got that look about you, too. I hope I'm wrong, because it's a sickness without a cure.
Michael lay awake long after everybody went to sleep. When he thought he was reasonably safe, he rolled his blanket and climbed quietly down from the loft. He paused in the dog run to lift a ham from a hook. Then Michael went to the shed for his bridle, blanket, and saddle. As he expected, he found Blaze standing outside the pen, fraternizing with the horses on the inside. Blaze made no fuss as Michael walked slowly to him and slipped a loop around his neck. Michael put the saddle on Blaze's back and led him a little way into the wood. There he dumped everything on the ground behind a screening of underbrush, tied Blaze at the end of the rope, and hung the ham from a limb high enough that no varmint was likely to steal it during the night. He patted Blaze on the neck before he left him.
Sorry, old boy, but you're gonna have to wait here till I'm ready.
He worked his way carefully back to the cabin and up the ladder to the loft. He lay on the straw and hoped no one would notice in the morning that his blanket was gone. The men began stirring in the yard long before any sign of daylight appeared in the east. Michael was the first to climb down from the loft. He bumped into Mordecai, who came out of the sleeping side of the double cabin.
Whoa, up already? Well, that's what I like to see, a lad so full of ambition that he wakes up the roosters. You go in the kitchen and kindle a fire for your mama so she can start breakfast. We'll be wanting to travel as quick as we can.
Heather and Annie, sleeping in the kitchen, awakened when Michael started bumping the firewood around.
Is Papa gone already?
No, Annie, not yet.
Heather didn't speak, but her eyes said she was trying hard to act grown and not cry. By the time Patience came into the kitchen, Michael had a good blaze going in the hearth.
You've put on too much wood. You want me to burn everything up?
His mother's eyes had a hollow look. She'd been crying, and he doubted she had slept much.
It'll be all right. Pop will be back before you know it, hardly.
And stay maybe a week. Here, grind up some coffee. Wouldn't want them starting a long trip without even a cup of coffee.
His sisters got dressed while Michael's back was turned, and he gladly relinquished the woman's work to them. He wanted to get out of the kitchen before he made some mistake that would put Mama in an even worse mood. He heard a familiar voice, loud in the early morning darkness, and felt disgust.
Don't worry, boys. Old Cyrus is here. I told you you could count on me. And looky here, I left the mule at home. Got me a prideful stallion to carry me to Texas.
Dang it. Well, Cyrus would probably tire quickly and turn back. Or the men would tire of him and chase him back. Breakfast finished, Mordecai bid his children goodbye one by one, lingering longest with the sobbing Annie, who would not let go of his neck until he forcibly pried her loose. He hugged and kissed Patience, then got on his horse.
Let's be on our way.
It was still so dark that Michael couldn't tell what color horse Blackwood was riding. At least it wasn't that old mule. Patience stood in the dog run and watched until Mordecai and the other riders disappeared into the darkness.
All right, let's not be letting the Lord and the daylight catch us idle.
Michael went out to milk the cow, then picked up a hoe and walked to the garden. Every so often he felt compelled to glance toward the place where he had staked Blaze and cached his traveling outfit. A couple of hours after daylight, two men named Thomas rode up to the garden where Michael and his brothers were working. Their faces looked grim.
You all see any strangers come by this morning?
Michael and Joseph and Andrew glanced at one another. James, being just six, stared in silent curiosity at the men. Because Joseph was the oldest, he did the answering.
No, sir. Ain't been no strangers come this way.
Somebody stole a horse out of our pen during the night. Black horse he was, with a snip nose and a star on his forehead. Stocking on the right foreleg.
Maybe it was Injuns.
Andrew was almost eager about it. Very little exciting ever happened around here. Concern leaped into Joseph's eyes.
Come to think of it, old Blaze ain't been round this morning.
Michael saw trouble coming and quickly headed it off.
Old Blaze was just here a little while ago. I seen him.
Joseph appeared satisfied, and Michael eased.
Well, if you all see anything in my horse, I'd be obliged if you'd let me know.
Michael suspected he knew why Cyrus Blackwood had been able to leave the mule at home. Controlling his impatience was like skinning a bear with a dull knife, but Michael had to give Papa and the others a head start. Often as not, Mordecai forgot something the first time and had to come back. If Michael were caught trailing after him, Papa would not give him a second chance. So he stayed in the garden and worked like he was being paid for it. That came dangerously near to arousing his older brother's suspicion. Joseph stared at him in disbelief.
I ain't seen you putting so much sweat since I don't know when. I figured you'd crawl up into the loft and sulk when Papa didn't take you.
Michael hoped his eyes did not betray the excitement which had his body tingling.
That wouldn't change anything.
No, but I figured you'd take it a lot harder. I swear, you'll make a farmer in spite of yourself.
A while after the Thomas brothers left, Michael became convinced Papa had not forgotten anything and was not coming back. It was time. He pointed toward the woods.
Look at yonder, Joseph. Did you see that?
His brother glanced up from the hoeing and frowned.
See what?
Big fat doe just come out of the timber right yonder.
If she did, she's gone now.
She was there. She looked mighty good quartered and hung up in the dog run.
You're just tired of the hoe.
I'll go fetch her.
Michael gave Joseph no opportunity for argument. He walked briskly to the cabin for his rifle. He filled the shot pouch and powder horn with all they would hold. Patience Lewis watched with curiosity, hands on her slender hips.
You fixing to go to war?
I just seen a big fat doe.
How many shots you figure it'll take?
I like to always go prepared.
Patience placed one hand on top of his head. The last year or two, he'd grown tall enough that she had to look up to him, almost like she did Papa.
I saw you out there beating the ground to death with that hoe. I know how disappointed you are.
It'll be all right.
His mother's gaze was steady and penetrating, as if she could read what was in his mind. It made him uncomfortable.
You've got eyes just like your papa's. They're always looking off into the distance like his. I'm afraid they'll never be at peace. They'll never see a place they're content to settle on.
Michael started toward the door, then paused. He turned to see his mother still watching him. He felt himself compelled to go back to her.
Mama?
Yes?
Nothing, just...
He leaned down and kissed her, then turned quickly away. He walked hurriedly toward the woods. He turned once to look back. She was watching him from the dog run, a hand shading her eyes.
She knows.
The thought shook him for a moment, and he half expected that she would send Joseph to catch him. But she did not. If she knew and made no move to stop him, he reasoned, it meant she realized it was time to cut the string, to let him seek his own destiny. Papa had been on his own younger than this. He turned once again as he entered the timber. His brothers were still in the garden. Joseph was working, but Andrew had stopped, his gaze following Michael. Andrew was always the one quickest to laugh, but now his shoulders were slumped. He had an uncanny way of sensing things.
He knows, too.
Somehow they both knew. He went directly to the place where he had left Blaze tied and his saddle stashed. Blaze's ears pricked forward. He hadn't had much chance to graze, for grass was scant amid this heavy pine timber that blocked off the sunshine, and the rope had left him only a little room to move around. Well, he'd just have to make do. He could drink when they crossed the creek a little ways down the trail, but he would have to put off grazing until Michael decided to stop. Michael saddled him and tied the rolled blanket behind. He retrieved the ham he had left hanging high in a tree, then set out through the woods at a fast trot. He wanted to make as much early distance as possible in case his mother began to have second thoughts and sent somebody out after him. A couple of miles farther on, he cut into the trail the travelers and hunters used going west. The tracks of the horses were fresh and deep and easy to see. He might wish later that he had Andrew's ability at tracking, but so long as Papa left this clear a trail, he should have no trouble following. The afternoon was well along when he came upon a place where the remnants of a campfire still smoldered. The horse hunters evidently had nooned here, boiling coffee, frying venison. Michael became aware of his own hunger. He had no utensils for cooking, but he rekindled the fire with fresh wood. He loosened the saddle's girth and staked Blaze at the end of the rope to allow him to graze. He sliced off a cut of ham and wrapped it around a stick and held it over the fire. The meat came undone and fell into the coals.
Dang it!
He retrieved it with the point of the stick, dusted most of the ashes and dirt off onto his pants leg, and tried again. His impatience did not allow the ham time to cook through. The result was barely passable, but he was hungry enough to get it down despite the clinging ashes and the gritty sand. There'd been no opportunity to sneak bread out of the cabin. He had done well to get away with a supply of powder and shot. His skin prickled with the need to be on the move, but he could tell that the men had rested their horses a while. To do less would be to risk overrunning them. He stretched out on the ground and tried to nap. He'd not slept much last night, but the nervousness and excitement had his blood pumping too strongly. Before long, he tightened the girth, coiled the rope, and resumed his journey. The increasing freshness of the horse manure warned him late in the afternoon that he was pressing too closely. Caught now, he would almost certainly be sent home. He stopped before dark and struck a small fire with flint and steel, cooking another piece of the ham. If it had tasted poor at noon, it was even less appealing now. He could see where he was going to become almighty tired of existing on ham, augmented by a few berries he managed to pick along the way. It occurred to him that he'd not planned this trip as carefully as he might. Well, his father had told him of living on water and air for days at a time. A man was not so easily killed as was commonly supposed. Determination was not to be discounted. At dark, Michael spread the blanket, lying on half of it and pulling the other half over him. He listened to the sounds awakened by the night. He had slept in the woods many times, hunting with his father, but this was the first time alone. He found more thrill in it than threat. Mordecai had taught him that a man had little to fear so long as he understood the woods and its creatures and met them on their own terms. The concern, if there was one, was with the human animals and with oneself. More than anything else, Mordecai had told him, a man had to come to terms with himself, smothering both his pridefulness and his self-doubts.
A man has got to know what he can do and what he can't. And being by yourself is something some just can't stand for long at a time. If you ain't your own best company, the woods will leave you crazy or dead.
At dawn, Michael moved Blaze to give him a fresh patch of grass to graze upon before they set out again. He shot a rabbit feeding on the underbrush, trusting that his father and party were far enough ahead not to hear, or if they heard, would not be curious enough to come back and investigate. After all, they were traveling through a partially settled country. He roasted the rabbit on the end of a stick, glad to give the ham a rest. His hunger did not let him wait for the meat to be done. He ate part of it still pink in color while the rest finished cooking over the shimmering coals. He knew he should save part of it for noon, but he felt too hungry. When he kicked dirt over the fire to smother it, nothing was left of the rabbit but hide, innards, and a scattering of small bones. Once during the morning, he encountered a few minutes of confusion and wished for his younger brother, Andrew. A set of tracks pulled out of the main trail and branched off to the south. He struggled over his decision whether to follow those or remain with the larger trail and the tracks that continued upon it. He decided there probably were not enough horses in the split-off group to be his father's bunch. Still, a lingering doubt pestered him through the day. During his noon stop for rest, he was unable to nap for worrying. He found little comfort in an adage of his father's.
When you make up your mind to something, stay with it and don't let doubts lead you astray.
Mordecai had always added with a grin that it probably wouldn't make much difference in the long run anyway. Chances were that either choice would be wrong. He saw a couple of deer and considered shooting fresh meat, but concern over the tracks left him no patience for it. Toward evening, he made another decision. The only way to set his mind at ease was to sneak up on the horseman's camp. Darkness dropped down hurriedly over the dense woods. He couldn't see the tracks anymore. He had to go on faith that the horseman still followed the old wagon trace. Thinking he smelled wood smoke, he stopped. The notion passed, and he was about to ride on when the smell came again. In the distance, he saw a faint point of firelight. Blaze raised his head, catching the scent of the smoke, or perhaps of other horses. If Michael rode closer, Blaze was likely to whinny and give him away. He tied the horse and moved on afoot. He saw figures moving casually around the fire, as men would when cooking up a mess of victuals. The smoke brought an aroma of coffee and of roasting meat that reminded him he had taken no supper. The ham was becoming tiresome, cooked on a stick without salt or any of the other seasonings his mother and sisters used to give it flavor. He thought he was moving silently, but suddenly he came upon a large, dark shape. He had almost walked into the horses, tied along a picket line.
Something spooked a horse. Could be a catamount prowling around. We better go take a look.
Michael retreated back into the timber and dropped behind the black curtain of underbrush. He held his breath as footsteps crunched the fallen mat of old leaves.
I don't see nothing, Mordecai.
It's probably that dun horse, old Wilson's, biting at one of the others. He's been trying for 2 days to take a chunk out of my sorrel.
Michael took comfort in knowing this was Mordecai's camp. But being so near his father brought him a feeling akin to homesickness. He wanted to rise up and announce himself, especially when his stomach growled and the smell of food tantalized him wickedly. But he'd not traveled far enough yet. Mordecai would probably send him home. With regret that went all the way to the bone, he pushed himself to his feet and walked back to Blaze. He backtracked in darkness a mile or so. He dared not build a fire and risk its being seen. He made a dry, hungry camp, then spent a restless night with little sleep.